Hi, everybody. You're listening to Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show. Oh, by the way, this is Don K. Reed. Member from the Doo-Wop Shop.
Hi, this is Mike Miller. I am proud to say that I have as my special guest Little Anthony from the Imperials. How you doing, Anthony?
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
One of my heroes in this business, and I will say that as far as vocal harmony and finesse and poise, there was no better group than Little Anthony and the Imperials.
Well, you know, I think that maybe in the way we did it, but there were so many great groups of times in the time that came up after about 55 years of this business.
Right.
I mean, everything from the Hilos to the Freshmen to the Moongos, the Flamingos, the Four Lads, the Four Aces, you know, all these guys, and probably missed about another 100 groups.
Yeah, I know what you mean. My mother put a little transistor radio in my crib when I was a kid, and for some reason my ear found Jocko and Symphony Sid. And
that's what we used to listen to.
You know, and for some reason I grew up, and when I was 14 and 15, I knew all the words to the R&B tunes, and I don't know how they got there.
Hey,
you know, it's funny.
Yes, it happens. And so we would influence as kids coming up with that kind of thing. So they're, to me, the most purest group ever I've ever heard in my life.
Right.
Was the Hilos.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And their tenor and their whole, Phil Marcellino, who was the bass player that
right.
I had the pleasure of meeting, in that group. I was so influenced by them. In fact, Clarence and all the guys were. They were not only just great singers, but they were also musicians. And
right.
guys read music. I mean, literally, they read music. And they played instruments.
Well,
they were an extension of their instruments. So, and their voices were so well defined. Now, with Little Anthony Imperials, we may not have the greatest defined voices or, you know, individual talented voices, because they're far more greater singing groups and talent than we were. But what we have, I think, is a special thing that was imparted to us many years ago by Mr. Richard Barrett.
Right.
Is that blending. The art of blending.
Well, listening is the most important
mm-hmm.
part of blending, I think, you know.
Yeah, you know, if you ever been in a glee club.
Right.
I did in boys' high school. And
right.
that's what you did. Because you didn't have no great singers. But what made it sound so good was the art of blending and understanding what your role was and to do your role at the best that you can do it. And that's really what makes that sound happen. You can have a bunch of talented singers, but they don't sound that good together.
Right. I've had umpteen groups, and certainly I know that. You can take the best singers in the world, and you put them together,
yeah.
and the blend is the blend, and you got to know when to push, when to pull, when, you know,
mm-hmm.
it's, you know, how to breathe. Fort Greene Park, and I went to LIU, so I know exactly. I actually went to school at the Paramount, and I used to eat at Junior's every day, so.
It's true. Everybody's at Junior's. I'm going to New York. I'll be in New York in April 5th, with 2 weeks at Feinstein's.
Right.
And I'm going dead to Junior's, baby, on my day off.
Oh, yeah, that's unbelievable. So you started with the DuPonts, and, you know, there's a record called Prove It Tonight, and I have that in my collection, and I think that's a great tune, man.
Something tells me you love me.
know, when you're a kid, you don't know what you're doing. You're basically just opening your mouth and it comes out. You know,
yeah, but good stuff came out.
if there's something there, you know, it's like if there's a gift of talent, and maybe it hasn't been developed yet, but it's there. You can hear it. Yeah, it'll come out.
Somebody love you.
Yeah, but, you know, I'll tell you something. Everything that you guys touched, I mean, and let's face it, you know, as they say, God was smiling because, you know, right away, double-sided hit, and right away, you know, right into the thick of things with the first couple of tunes, and then it only got better from there. So, I mean, you know, what a wonderful career.
I really got to set the record straight with a lot of people out there is that we weren't overnight sensation.
Right.
We was doing that stuff when I was with the DuPonts. I was like 15, and they were my high school buddies.
Right.
And we had several records bombed. I mean,
right.
Absolutely zilch.
Right.
Nada.
Yeah.
But also we had the Imperials, which really at that time was called the Chesters.
Right.
And we had some menial records like Fries Burn No More or something. Or,
right. I remember that one.
Yeah, I don't remember. But we really didn't. We didn't do anything for like 3 years. I mean, we were trying and failing. I mean, actually, but before I even got with the group, they went to do the Apollo Theater in New York.
Right.
The Amateur Hour Night, and they failed.
No kidding, wow.
Well, I'm in good company because Johnny Mathis failed.
And yeah.
People failed. I mean,
yeah, I'm sure.
But the point was, it was a learning situation. You learned a lot. And I think what happened was when I got with the guys with the Chesters, which
right.
was really the Imperials,
right?
That's when we found something. It's like a, what do they call it? When you play baseball or football,
right.
Chemistry.
Right. Oh, of course.
You know that as a
right.
group singer, it's that chemistry. And that goes, you know, one of the greatest groups I've heard, and they were another group that weren't individually great singers, but my Lord, they were so, they have harmony. This day still makes me shiver.
Right.
The Flamingos.
Oh, well, you know, Terry Johnson lives like
Johnson.
That. Terry lives down the block from me, and I see him all the time.
Yeah, all them guys, man.
That's why I'm going to ask you about George Goldman.
Yeah. We were on there with the same label.
Yeah, I know that. I know that.
Well, I was proud because I was a kid. They inspired me to sing, and
right.
I was about 13.
Right.
When I heard a song called Golden Teardrop.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you. my love, if you make me reconsider what a fool I've been, and swear to God I'll stray no more. My other stars above, golden teardrops, you haunt my memories. Because of me, you make me sit right down and pay up the scars. So go back where you came from. She won't need you anymore. I never
That's true.
If you listen to that, it was as if they were doing it today.
And not only that, you know, you got in there with the band and everything ran at once. So if the drummer dropped the stick,
right,
you know, you had to start over. Right.
And that guy, and those guys came out with Golden Teardrops. Man, I call that one of the greatest harmonic-sounding R&B sounds I've ever heard.
Right. No, I agree with you. But, you know, let's go back to the Imperials. I mean, the Imperials, I mean, as far as, and I'll say this, and you know, but the people that are listening don't know, as far as Blow Harmony goes and that kind of thing, just straight oohs and ahs, the Imperials were phenomenal. And I remember seeing you guys, you know, 35 years ago with the white gloves and the choreography. It didn't get any better than that, Anthony.
Well, you know, again, that goes back to Richard Barrett, who really was our mentor.
Right.
And he was the guy that told us, look, if you want to have the longevity in this, then you better be able to sing anything.
Right. No, I hear you.
And you know, and then Teddy Randazzo came into our life, and then Don Costa, of course, the great Don Costa.
Right.
Who was Sinatra's man.
Absolutely.
Really began to show us what it was all about.
Well, those arrangements, you know, outside looking in and those kind of arrangements, I don't even think that the R&B people and the doo-wop world was even ready for the sophistication of those arrangements.
No.
They were so over the top and fantastic that, you know,
yeah, you know, what we did was we did something that a lot of the acts didn't, or the groups didn't do.
Right.
We were so turned on by everything. I mean, I'm still an opera fan this day. Classical music is still very strong. So we had such a roundness in music.
Right.
That we were a little bit ahead of the game, and we always knew that we wanted to stay around a while. So we hung out with those kind of people.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Well, you know, if you're playing basketball, you always want to play with guys that are taller and better than you because then you get better.
Right. So, you know, it's like singing. We didn't stay in that world at that time.
Right.
Which was called R&B or street corner music.
Right.
And we sort of drifted into another world. It was called pop.
Well, you know, it's really funny.
We created it, contemporary pop. There wasn't such thing until us.
I was a dean in a tough junior high school in the Bronx for 30 years, and but also I had Jimmy Key's kids, and Jimmy always used to come into my office because his kids, you know, they were a little troubled, his kids, you know, Jimmy Jr. and Paul, and he would say to me, you know, first of all, it was tough in those days, you know, for groups like us because everybody covered our stuff. But he said, we never sang one note of doo-wop, man. We were singing jazz and R&B. And don't you forget it.
let me say the thing about doo-wop. If people don't understand, that is never was a word
right
in those days. That came in 1973 by a disc jockey in New York.
Yeah, Gus Gossard.
I don't think his name.
Yeah.
He phrased it because he was thinking of all of the groups that were coming out of the New York area, like the Freeze and Elegance and all them, and they were doing all these sounds that really weren't the same. They couldn't emulate the sounds that the R&B groups were doing.
Right.
So they created their own style, which is a thing to do. And they had like background like doo-wop, and you know, they took it someplace, and so this guy gave them the name.
Right.
But they took all the other great groups and everybody lumped them into the same bag. That the Flamingos was never that.
Right. No,
the Mungos, most of all.
Oh yeah. Oh,
well, I can name, you ever hear these guys?
Most of all, I want your warm embrace. No one can take your place. I need you most of all. Most of all, I want your sweet caress. Truly, I must confess, I need you most of all. When I sleep at night, I dream one of I hope no one's there, and that's why I'm so blue. Most of all, the one thing I miss is the way we used to kiss. Of you, and when I hold it, no one's there, and that's why I'm so blue. Most of all,
chills, you know. I mean, of course, you know, I mean, the best of the best, but you know, I'm not going to let you get away with that because the Imperials were the best of the best also.
Kids, you know, you got to understand, we really didn't have what they had. What we did do is that we learned. We worked it up. We overachieved.
Uh-huh.
See? And what happened when we hit our stride, we found a sound. Something uniquely different than everybody else.
Right.
Thank you.
outside looking in. And I wanna be back on the inside with you. You are with somebody new, and I don't know what to do, 'cause I'm still in love with you. I'm on the outside looking in. I don't wanna be left on the outside all alone. Well, I guess I've had my day, and you let me go my way. Now it's me who has to pay. I never should have gone away. I never should have gone away and left you like I did, with tears in your eyes. I thought you'd take me back, but now, to my surprise, I'm on the outside looking in. Gotta find a way back to your heart, dear. Once again, won't you take me back again? I'll be waiting here till then, on the outside looking in. Won't you take me back again? I'll be waiting here till then, on the outside looking in. On the outside looking in.
Understand, you had a lot of musical people in your family too.
Yes, as my whole family. Yes.
Right, your mother, your father, your brothers.
My gospel singer, my aunts were gospel singers, Nazareth Baptist gospel singers. My great grandfather was a great singer and a deacon. It goes all the way now, maybe 100 years or so.
Wow.
And then my brothers were all musicians. My one brother, Donald, who passed away, he played everything by ear, about 3, 4, 5 different instruments, just by ear.
Wow.
He composed and taught himself how to compose.
So, you know, it does trickle down, I mean, you know, when you're around
it. It's genetic. And also, my grandchildren today, my granddaughter, Bailey, sings. My son, two sons, Tony.
Wow.
And Daniel, three of them, sing.
Wow.
So genetically, it just kind of goes down. Now, I got one daughter,
right.
Lisa, can't sing a note. She said.
She, no, you know what it is? She just doesn't know that she can't sing a note.
I don't know, man,
she
but can. You say, she can't sing a note. It's just that, sometimes the genetics and the genes will pass, or generation will pass somebody, and they go down the line.
Well,
no one
I'll tell
knows
you.
What it is, but that's how it is.
I was at the Broward Center the other night when you guys were there, and of course, you know, unbeknownst to anybody else, I had my little digital recorder,
mm-hmm.
and I actually copped two kinds of people, and I spoke to Clarence, and Clarence says, "You got to send it to me."
Just two kinds of people.
Funny thing is, I mean, could you hear a pin drop in that auditorium? And I mean, that to me, it really doesn't get any better than that. I mean, every note was a pearl.
You know, the oddest thing, we get an email.
Yep.
Like my publicist taught me a little lesson about
right.
it. He always says, when it bleeds, it leads.
Yes.
So here we're getting standing ovations and just accolations, and
right.
everybody's saying, oh, my goodness, that was a great show.
Right.
Oh, my God. It was only 30 minutes, by the way. And
right.
That's not even nothing. We normally do anywhere from an hour and 45 minutes to 2 hours on stage.
Right,
when we're
right.
ourselves. But the point was is that I get an email, we get an email, and there's one person in the audience says, I didn't come to hear Grapevine. I didn't come to hear the, Every Breath You Take.
Oh,
I came
please.
To hear your records, and I'm going, wow. And the people around me felt the same way. Well, Clarence emailed them back
uh-huh.
and said, look, we're sorry you didn't appreciate what we were doing.
Right.
But obviously everybody else did, because we kept getting standing ovations.
I was there. I was.
Right. So, and then I asked, and he said, did you uh-huh. hear all the records that we sang? Did
right.
you miss? Where were you?
Right.
Were you away from your seat? How can you? Well, I asked my publicist, who was really brilliant, George Dashinger.
Oh, I spoke to George at length.
Yeah.
You know, what a sweet guy.
He says, Anthony, let me tell you something. I found out when I was to work for the newspapers, and I was a journalist, and I worked for the newspapers. Whenever you cover anything and it was really good news and
right.
it was good, or you wanted to praise somebody, you only got a few letters maybe sometimes. But when you would can somebody,
right.
The letter would roll in and the editor would love you.
Right.
So what he said is that there are people that no matter what you do, they're
oh.
not going to find any peace of mind. In order to get any recognition or response from them, you, even if it's negative, they can tell their friends, well, yeah, he emailed me back.
Yeah, yeah.
the point was that you can only go by who you are, how long you've been in longevity, and what the people, whether they sense them, how they're responding and reacting to you. You get first-hand reaction when you're doing something live.
Well, that show was a fabulous show, and every note that you guys sang was a pearl. And what I realized, okay, being in the business, maybe other people don't, you know, just get the big picture, is that you worked your tail off that night, man. You sang every syllable. And the other thing that about Anthony that is well appreciated is that your enunciation is impeccable, which a lot of guys
well,
have sang this
that.
Music.
I got that, and I got to give credit where credit is due. That was the late George Golder.
Right.
Who inspired me. He said, you know, he knew I had a lisp, you know?
Right.
I still do.
Right.
And he was telling me, he said, when I was recording Tears of My Pillow, and he said,
right.
Anthony, he just said, wait, cut.
Right.
He says, well, you know, hey, wait a minute. He said, he asked me from the booth, Anthony, who's your favorite singer?
Uh-huh.
That's a weird thing to ask me while I'm recording.
Uh-huh.
I said, well, I told him Frankie Lyman, and I told him Nat King Cole. And he said, "You," what is Nat King Cole? What do you like about him? I said, well, because he's so cool, you know?
Yeah.
And how he says, you know, it's how Nat sings every syllable, every word.
And puts the T on the end and the D on the end of every word.
Listen to Sinatra, the same.
Right.
Completing, we call completing the
right.
and completing the words.
Right.
He said, I want you to do that, and just the way you talk, you have a very high voice. I don't want you to sing with, like, you're trying to pretend you're being someone else or you're trying to imitate them.
Right.
And I'm not alone with that. That happened to quite a few artists actually found their style that way. Al Green found his style that way in the studio.
Right.
But he says, I want you to sing it and like you talk it. And I want you to say each word clearly.
Right.
Like if you say, you don't remember me.
Right.
No, don't do that. Go, you don't remember me.
Right.
And I sat there, see, let me go up and practice and practice. I came back and I opened my mouth and I could see everybody in the booth go, oh, yeah, you know.
Don't remember me, but I remember you.
So I knew I had nailed something, and that was the beginning of the sound of Little Anthony.
Well, because a lot of guys that sing this music, they slide into the notes and they slur.
We're from the old school, man. You know,
it's like slang. You know,
you sing on the street corners and stuff. You don't have no monitors.
You're right.
You don't have any sound. The wind is blowing, so your harmony is going all over the place.
Well, but there's another thing.
It's precise. You had to really nail it, we used to say.
Oh, yeah.
And if one guy would be singing, hey, man, it ain't all, it's ooh.
Right.
You know, you make everything over the top.
Right.
And it worked.
Right. Well, you know, many years I've been telling guys, ooh is not who, and you know, it's ooh, you know, there's no, you know, it's all by itself.
Oh, A-I-O-O.
Well,
weird how people don't, you know, if you're from New York, you have a tendency to talk like a New York.
Well, the other thing is, too, I started playing guitar when I was younger, so I'm a vocal arranger. I can actually put the chord out in front of me and strip it down and say these are the notes. And how many times I've been with guys in a room and they're singing, and I say, but that note is not in the chord. Plus the fact that, you know, the Imperials did such sophisticated stuff, you know, because you didn't just do straight ahead C, F, and G. You did a lot of augmented chords, and you did a lot of diminished chords, and you sang a lot of harmony. It was very sophisticated for that genre.
Genre in that time, and what we, again, let me give credit. That's what we learned from the high lows,
right?
And the freshmen, because Kenny Seymour was our voice guy,
right?
And also sang with us, you know, replaced guys when they got sick and stuff,
right?
Kenny really was a brilliant guy, and pianist, guitarist, and so when he would write out the whole sheet, the arrangement,
right,
then break it down on the piano. You know what I'm talking about? This note is here, and you say, that doesn't sound right. He said, check it out. Now you hit this note right here, dang, and you hit and you go, whoa, you know, what was that?
Right, because on the piano they could just tear down the triad and they say a third, a third, and a third, and there it is.
Right.
And you guys sang mostly second tenor, first tenor, and inverted.
First tenor, second tenor, and baritone, no bass. In the beginning we had bass.
Right.
And then even at one time we used to sing fifth tenor, which comes from gospel, which is from groups like the Nightingale.
Right.
And we learned from that. We do that. We did it in several tunes. And people say, who in the world were hitting those? Like, what? Whoa, what was that?
You mean somebody's hitting like a seventh in
there? Yeah, literally.
Yeah.
I mean, like a squeaking above. It's like a contralto and a soprano.
Uh-huh.
There's something about a soprano and a contralto is in the middle there somewhere, and then it gets that you pull them together, and this weird sound comes out.
Yep.
And you don't know what it is, but sure sounds good.
But it sure is funky.
Right.
Hey, tell me about the tune "Father, Father."
The "Father, Father" one in 71.
Right.
I was in Las Vegas, and I was so, you know, I became really friends with Marvin Gaye.
Oh, okay, great.
And Marvin came out with his song.
Right.
And I dug it so much, and I was trying to find out how can I express that, you know, what I was feeling at the time. And so I wrote that. And several other tunes that were never ever to be heard again.
Now, supposedly you sang that on the Merv Griffin show.
Yeah, I did it on the Merv Griffin show. I did it on, we did it quite a few different places. We actually did Georgia, which is in four-part Mother Harmony. If you ever get our, we did a CD about 5 years ago called, Up Close and Personal.
Right.
Up Close and Personal, I forgot what it was called.
Right.
But anyway, I may get one to you. Get plans to get one to
you. Cool, I will.
We do all a cappella.
Uh-huh.
And we went back to the roots in groups like the Eldorados, you know?
Well, I have a couple of cuts that are where Bobby J does the intros.
Right, that's the one.
Right, and I have about four or five of those cuts, man. Those are all dynamite.
The city of Chicago gave us great vocal groups, some of whom are still singing today. one of the great ones. Unfortunately, their lead singer recently passed away, Perkle Lee Moses Jr. His fabulous group was the Eldorados. And what a great song was, I'll Be Forever Loving You.
Is it yes or is it no? Should I stay and be happy here or should I go? If this is so, I'll be forever loving you. Does your heart beat like mine? Do you sometimes think that you had too much wine? If this is so, I'll be forever loving you. When you're near me, everything is alright. When you're gone, I feel like I'm in need. When you smile, I feel so gay. Ah, is it yes or is it no? Should I stay and be happy there or should I go? If this is so, I'll be forever loving you. When you're near me, everything is alright. When you're gone, I feel like I'm in need. When you smile, I feel so gay. Ah, is it yes or is it no? Should I stay and be happy here or should I go? If this is so, I'll be forever loving you.
Very hard.
It ain't, because all you could do is get the key from the pianist.
Oh, yeah.
Or he can hold, we dropped that track out, and
right.
We just have the vocal tracks in.
Right.
But all he did was to give us a basis of a foundation.
Yeah, because, you know,
we had to wail it. We had to nail the thing.
Hey,
it took a long time. And
groups,
we got despondent.
Nowadays.
Oh, man, let's go back over that again. You know?
Nowadays, you go in, you get the music in your ear and the click track and whatever and the tempo, and then you sing it, and then they wipe the music. And so you've sung it to music, so it's like in tempo, and you stay in the same key, and then they wipe the music, and it comes out a cappella.
Right. When you really do an a cappella, it's really you're popping of your fingers. You get the key.
Right.
And then you go for it. We could have done that, but when you're recording, you want it to be precise.
Oh, absolutely.
Good thing singing on the street with a bunch of little girls hanging around you. Nobody cares. But when you're selling something, you've got to, and you want to be accepted for something that you did very well,
uh-huh.
You have to find something really to do. So we use the click for tempo. And then we used it. Actually, our engineer used the finger pop. Really, was a click.
Right.
And we weren't finger popping ourselves, but it was
right.
A click track.
One of my favorite songs was written by a neighbor of mine, Raul J. Cita. Cita is the writer and arranger for the Harp Tones. My favorite song is a song that's been done by Manhattan Transfer and a few other people, and now. Little Anthony and the Imperials give it their spin with that wonderful four-part harmony. And fellas, I see, that's the way it goes.
Bo, 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 bo.
Ah, ah.
Bo, 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 bo.
Ah, ah. I still remember the day that we your smile is something I'll never forget. And since that day, my love grows and grows.
Ooh. And that's the way it goes.
The way it goes. I spent a lifetime just waiting for you. And from now on, dear, my waiting is through. And you can make all my dreams come true.
And that's the way it goes. From out of nowhere,
you came into view.
Now I'm
completely
in love
with you.
You
are right in my heart, walked out.
You took its place without doubt. Just waiting for you.
Oh, 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 oh.
And from now on, dear, my waiting is through. And you can make all my dreams come true.
Ooh. And that's the way it goes.
From out of nowhere, you came into view. Now I'm completely in love with you. You walk right in. My heart walked out.
You took its place without doubt.
So won't you please open your heart to me, for since I've known you, you're all that I see. You are the one girl that my heart has chosen, and that's the way it goes.
Little Anthony and the Imperials are proud to have been label mates of the Flamingos on End Records. They took a song written by Al Dubin and introduced by Dick Powell back in the 1930s in the old Warner Brothers musicals, when they took the old chestnut I Only Have Eyes for You and gave it the doobop shabop.
Doobop shabop.
Boom, boom, boom.
Doobop shabop.
Boom.
Doobop shabop.
Boom, boom, boom.
Doobop shabop.
Oh,
my love must be a kind of blind love.
Oh,
I can't see anyone but you.
Oh, boom, boom, boom.
Oh,
all the stars out tonight. I don't know if it's cloudy or bright, and I only have eyes for you, dear. The moon may be high, but I can't see a thing in the sky, 'cause I only have eyes
for you.
I don't know if we're in a garden.
Oh,
You are here, and so am I. Maybe millions of people will go by, but they all disappear from view. And I only have eyes for you.
Do a chop. Do a
Right. So you did Merv Griffin. Did you ever get to meet Arthur Treacher?
Yeah. I met a lot of them. A lot of people don't realize we did more major television shows than any other group in the history of the United States of America.
And rightfully so, I'm sure.
Well, Hall of Fame people found out.
Yeah.
And they found out that we showed over 78 million records in a 50-year period.
Unbelievable.
Well, then when they started seeing these records, they thought, wait, nobody's done that. We didn't even know we did it. I mean, I don't even know how many songs we recorded. We must have recorded hundreds of songs. I don't know.
I'm sure you recorded tunes that the general public hasn't even heard.
Yeah, I've had people come to me and say, man, I got this out of YouTube.
Yeah.
Collect this thing, man, out of iTunes. Man, what was that song you sang? Oh, man, that was great.
Hey, you could.
Oh, my gosh, I forgot that was on the album.
You could see your whole life flash before you on YouTube, man. The world is different now.
Because what happened was it's given us a second. It's reinvented the lamp in the Imperials because young people are falling into it. They're surfing the place. And they see this group and they're going, what is that?
You know? Yeah, except for one thing.
And the people said, I don't know who you are.
Yeah.
Philippines, man. I'm talking the Philippines, Japan, all over the world, Norway. Uh-huh. YouTube. We're all over YouTube.
But you guys have, you have a step up, and that's because... You know, the Teddy Randazzo stuff, I mean, those have become standards, and so has, you know, the original two, double-sided hit. I mean, two kinds of people. That song will go on forever and ever and ever, Tears on My Pillow. I mean, you know.
My Pillow was a pop tune. Two People was closer to what you call a street sound or doo-wop or whatever it is.
Right.
Though I've had people tell me different. You know, you know, when we recorded that song with music, obviously.
Right.
But we've never done it with it. We've always done it a cappella.
Uh-huh.
And the reason why is when we were kids and Ernest wrote that song, we tested the song in the street. It was the summer.
Wow.
Fort Greene. We went over there where the girls are.
Oh, I know the park very well.
Good place to test music.
Yeah.
We went over out to the bench and to where the... Like the way we always sat and do it, we started singing. And you know, we have little girls go by and they hear it and stop, see? And before you know it, you got a little crowd there.
You bet.
And we were singing that song. We also sang it down in Hoyt and Skimholen.
Oh, yeah. Brooklyn. That's where I used to get off. I used to get off at that stop to go to the Brooklyn Fox to go to Murray.
Great acoustics, man. One of the best subway sounds.
I know it well.
Every group in the world used to go down there, man, I'll tell you.
And we're the only two people that can spell Skimholen.
Yeah.
You know.
Hoyt. Come on.
Yeah, you know, I mean, now...
That kind of Fox Theater, the old Fox Theater used to be.
Oh, exactly, man. That was, you know, in those days, you know, you'd go see the movie, the show, the movie, the show, the movie, the show, and you'd move down each show until you were sitting in the front row. But what I remember correctly is that everybody smoked.
Yeah.
And so if you were an act up there, you were doing like three or four shows a day.
I was smoking.
Yeah, there you go. You've blown it back.
Right,
no, I hear you. There's a tune that I used to do with one of my disco groups when I was in the disco mode years ago. Mm-hmm. We did some recordings, and that's the Who's Gonna Love Me tune.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
who was responsible for that? You weren't with the group at that time, I don't think.
No, that was Ernest. Let me see, who was that? Kenny, Ernest, and Clarence, and Sammy.
You know, and the most interesting part of that tune, if you've listened to it a couple of times, there's a little talking part at the beginning, and the lead goes, you can't take the car. Take the kids.
That's crazy. That's when we broke up for a minute.
Yeah, for a minute, I remember.
And Sammy Strain, which a lot of people don't realize, was right there at the beginning after Tracy. Nathaniel Rogers, when we started Real Kids, was bastard. So he was only there for a couple of years, 2.5 years.
Right.
And Tracy came up, we were all kids, babies running around the street.
Right.
But Tracy, who passed away a couple of years ago, Sammy came and took his place in 1960.
Right.
And he was there forever. You know, he was there all the way. So all those great songs we had in the 60s was all Sammy. Sammy then went with the OJs. A lot of people don't realize he was with the OJs for 16 years.
Yeah, I read that, but I really didn't know that. I obviously didn't know that.
We knew, obviously, in the business, you know, all the groups. And groups, you know how that is, man. Groups hang with groups.
Oh, yeah.
That's just the way it is.
I know.
I mean, they admire each other with so much. They, you know, when you're doing something on stage, and you, like the Apollo, and you got maybe three or four other groups that are on the show, you can look in the wings. They're all standing, look and see what you're doing.
Oh, man. Absolutely. I mean, people don't realize how much groups root for each other backstage.
Today, they don't. I mean, rappers from another world. But then, it was an honor to meet Eddie Kendricks of Flingos, and he was honored to meet me. And we sit there and compare notes.
Oh, yeah.
You know, just talking about music. That's all we did.
Well, I had an interesting thing happen about 20-some-odd years ago is that we did a show, and if I remember correctly, Lou Christie was on the show. I had the group I had the group Harmony Street with the three girls and the bass singer, and I kept trying all night backstage because Don K. Reed was there and Brucey was there. And as a matter of fact, Hal Jackson was in the audience, and we had him come back, if you remember that night. And it was a long time ago, and I kept trying to get you to take a little cassette that I had, and I kept leaving it in front of you, and you just left it there. And there was no CD in that day. It was a cassette, and I stuck it in your valet suit bag. And then about a month later, I get a phone call, and it was your wife, and she said, Mike Miller, and I went, yeah. And you were in California at that time. She says, my husband would like to speak to you. And I said, who's your husband? She said, Little Anthony. And I said, well, what are you waiting for? Put him on. And you said to me, I listened to the cassette. It was good, man. I said, wow, that's like handing me gold, man, to have Little Anthony say he liked my stuff. I mean,
wow.
Give me a break.
Come on. I got to it.
Yeah.
Because it's always just, we got me in class, and sometimes we just sit there and listen. I'm like, man, I'm telling you, man, I mean, we listen to the Ink Spots and the Marvel at the late Nick Kenny, how his lead voice was. We used to say, man, that guy, and with a time when they didn't have the technology that they have today, you know, it's just amazing.
Well, a lot of people don't understand that the Platters covered most of what the Ink Spots did, you know.
Was a modern day Ink Spot.
Yeah.
Tony Williams was like Nick Kenny incarnated.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, you know,
Tony Williams, I got to tell you something. Man, that cat had a voice that should. Boy.
You bet. I know.
What that guy got had, man.
You know, Wayne Miller is a good friend of mine, and my name is Miller also. He calls me Cuz all the time. He calls me up. Hey, Cuz, how you doing? He sent me a picture. It's Little Wayne Miller's like kneeling down, and it's you, and it's Clarence, and I think Gene Chandler, and a couple of other people. And he told me, he says, that's one of his most cherished pictures.
Aww.
Is Wayne with the Imperials?
You know, that's nice.
He sent me the picture. But I'll tell you, Herb Reed got me in a dressing tent one time, and he says to me, kid, it wasn't all sweet. It was kind of bittersweet at times, because you know what? People made love to our music, but you know what? After the show, they ate in the restaurant. We ate on the bus. So how do you figure?
Yeah, I mean, we were on tour with them in the beginning. I mean, 1959.
Yeah.
I was on a tour called The Greatest Show of Stars.
Right.
Him and a bunch of thousand other great people on the show.
Right.
And the Platters were there. That was the first time I had met Tony and Zola and Lynch, you know.
Right.
And all those guys. And, you know, it was in Rupert, their piano player, who was really the voice guy. He was the guy that did most of their voicing.
Wow.
And even, and I tell you what, Herb Reed is, to me, one of the greatest bass sounds. I mean, he's one of the best I've ever heard.
Wow.
You can hear this guy, the resonance of his bottom of his notes.
Wow.
I used to stand in the wing and go, oh, my goodness. And I've heard some of the best. Donald Muffet.
Right.
Of the Belores.
Right.
He's doing that stuff with his voice. Oh, what was the name of that? Well, will you come over tonight?
Yep.
Oh, I just say, oh, my goodness. So that I met some of the greatest bass singers ever sang.
Oh yeah.
The Ravens, what's his name? Considered one of the best. Uh-huh. But I must say that Herb Reed is right up there with the top. You know who else was one of the finest bass singers? Sherman Gaines.
Oh yeah.
Of Frankie Lyman and the Teenagers.
Oh yeah.
It was a natural.
Well, I talk to Jimmy Merchant all the time. We call each other. The problem is when you get Jimmy on the phone, you mm-hmm. can be on for 4 hours.
Yeah, Jimmy.
I love him and Herman too.
Anyway, he stood out. If anybody in that group stood out,
yeah,
was him and Frankie Lyman, obviously.
Oh yeah. You know,
Sherman Gaines, man, my goodness. And then he sang Old Man River one day.
Yeah.
Apollo, and we all fell on the floor.
All right, so, you know, let's go up to the point where, you know, everybody's kind of like doing their own thing, and all of a sudden Dick Fox decides to do the Legends show at the Garden, and here come the Imperials again, and that's like rebirth.
Yeah, I got a call from him in 1990.
Right.
Was it 91? It's in there somewhere. I got a call from Dick, and I was a solo act, you know, for 16, 17
right.
years. And I had a call from Dick, and he said, man, I'm doing this show, and it's going to be a legend, it's going to be this, it's going to be at the Madison Square Garden. And I said, who's going to be there? He said, man, we're going to have the E Street Band. The E Street Band was...
Well, I know them well, yeah.
So they were our backup band for the whole show.
Wow.
Bruce was there, you know.
Well, you know what's funny? Stevie Jordan, who was the drummer for the E Street Band, he was a thin black kid. He came and went with them. He was my student in the junior high school.
Because he was there a minute. Now, Max Weinberg was with him for years.
Right, but Stevie was there for a little bit. I used to take his drumsticks away in the lunchroom when his mother used to say, he's going to be a famous drummer someday. And I said, yeah, but he's driving everybody crazy. She was right, and I was wrong.
There you go. What happened was I was just talking to him, and he kept calling me. I said, man, I don't want to go back. Like, now, man, I'm doing my thing. I'm making money. And I don't know. He said, I'm telling you, Anthony, this is going to be something else. And he said, what can I do to get you there? I said, well, okay, I'll tell you what. You pay my group this amount.
Uh-huh.
You pay me this amount.
Uh-huh.
I made it extravagant because I just wasn't, you know, I didn't know where Sammy was. I knew he was with the OJs. They were doing great.
Right.
You know, I didn't know where. I knew that Clash was in Vegas because I saw him all the time.
Right.
When I was in Vegas, and then I knew Ernest was in Europe. So it's kind of, I mean, it was spread out.
Right.
You know? So I really was doing it as a way to say, hey, man, we're not going to get together. It's not. It's
uh-huh.
You know, he called me back. He says, okay.
Uh-huh.
Holy.
He's a psychologist.
Right. That was the most money in my career ever made at that time.
Unbelievable.
With all the records we had, never made that kind of money.
Wow.
So when he said, okay, I said, it's going to be a heck of a show. Then he told me who was going to be on it.
Right.
You know, Ronettes, they got some of the girls together with you know, Ronnie Spector.
Yeah, well, you know, Ronnie lived in Danbury, Connecticut, where I lived for a whole bunch of years. She told me one night, because I used to get together with her and John Greenfield, she said, we tried to get back with the group, and we lasted like 2 weeks, and then we started to get on each other's nerves again.
Well, and some people just don't do well. With the Imperials now, we were always friends. We never lost that.
Very cool.
We might have went off on different ways because we wanted to try other things, but we always were friends. We still hung out together. We were like brothers. We are brothers. We've been together so dang long. And so we just had our differences, obviously, but we always, it never interfered in what we were trying to prove. We had these, each one had this drive in them to prove something, that they could be something special.
So right.
We didn't have that problem. But when I called those guys, I called Ernest and his daughter called me.
Right.
I got a number from someone. He says, my dad's in Europe. He's in Luxembourg. He's in Germany.
Uh-huh.
He was living in Europe for, Ernest speaks German.
Wow.
He speaks Dutch and German.
Wow.
That's how long he lived there. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
And so I said, well, can you get in touch with him and call me? 2 weeks later, I get a call. And it's Ernest. So I tell him what's happening. And he says, well, man, yeah, I mean, he's going to send me, the tickets going to set up? I said, yeah. He said, D, what are we going to do? I mean, we haven't been together. I don't, you know, I said, man, just sing. That's all. What we got to do?
Sing it in German. Just be there.
And then I call Clarence. Of course, Clarence right away. Say,
right.
Cool, you know?
Yeah.
And then I get a call from my daughter's mother,
uh-huh.
Melba Sanchez.
Right.
And she was really close with Sammy and stayed with, you know, go to all the OJ shows and
right.
stuff. And she said, oh, Sammy said, how come you didn't call him? He heard about this thing. I said, I don't know. He was with OJs and, you know, they're doing great in spring and, you know, time for doing what I'm doing, you know.
Right.
And she said, no, give him a call.
Uh-huh.
So I called him.
Wow.
He said, man, Eddie Virtual told him it was cool. Now, here's another thing your audience might want to know. Sammy Strain is the only group singer that won two awards. He's in the Hall of Fame twice.
Wow.
One with the OJs and one with us.
Wow.
The only one.
So
kind of like that we have. That's even a record no one has.
You know, being picked for, I mean, look, Terry Stewart is a very good friend of mine. And I see him personally when we lived at Harmony Street, went to the White House for the Clintons
a
bunch of times. And Terry, you know, we were on Fox News and everything, and the Clintons loved us. So we were one of the only doo-wop groups to really be there with the Clintons. And, and Terry Stewart caught wind of it, and he used to invite us every place. We actually were guests at his house New Year's one time, in 98. It was great. And I talked to him all the time. And he says, you know, it's funny about groups in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. There are groups that are not in there that should be there. And there are groups that are in there that shouldn't be there. He says,
right.
But I only get one vote, he said.
Yeah.
And so, you know, being in there, I mean, it's such an honor. You know, it's such a short list. It's got to be the thrill of a lifetime to be in there.
One of the greatest honors is like being in the Baseball Hall of Fame or the football, same thing, Football Hall of Fame.
Oh, I agree wholeheartedly.
Because what it does, it says to everybody, you are unique. You are now the same as Elvis and Smokey Robinson and, you know, all the greats that come through there and that are in there. You are now a part of that family, a very, very prestigious organization that you belong to. I get mail from there, I get all kind of stuff in there, I get to vote, I get to, when I go to Cleveland, I can walk in, I ain't gonna pay nothing.
Yeah, but you can only take Continental Airlines because nobody else flies into Cleveland. So, Anthony, what's your favorite Imperials tune?
I don't know. You know, you got me there. it was so many that I really enjoyed, man. Out of Sight, Out of Mind, which was a remake of the Five Keys.
And you know what?
I thought was one of the greatest, accomplishments this group ever did.
That's probably one of mine. And the diction comes in on that, too, because it's out of sight, and there's a pause.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And that is like vintage Anthony stuff, man, you know? I know.
And what Kenny did in there in the tenor part was just brilliant. He came up with this sound that just everybody said, oh, that's so cool. That's one of them. Shabba-da-ba-da-ba-da. Shabba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba. Shabba-da-ba-da-ba-da. Shabba-da-ba-da-ba-da.
Out of sight, out of mind. So the story goes. You forgot I exist.
You forgot I exist.
My broken heart knows.
No.
Out of sight, out of mind. You found someone new, but I can't change my love.
But I can't change my love.
The way that you do.
Ba-da-ba-da. Shabba-da-ba.
Out of sight, but not out of mind.
Right.
Don Costa.
Right.
I know you don't know what I'm going through. Standing here looking at. Okay, she's in love, don't stand in her way. But let me tell you that it hurts so bad. It makes me feel so sad. It's gonna hurt so bad if you walk away. Why don't you stay? Make it up to you. I'll do anything you want me to. You love me before, please love me again. I can't let you go back to him. He's so lonely in the world.
It hurts so bad.
Come back, it hurts so bad. Don't make it hurt so bad. I'm begging you.
But I had another song, Night After Night. I tell myself, who am I, Get Out of My Life.
Right.
Which is one of those artistically loved songs by a lot of artists that tell me they love it.
Right.
Not commercial.
Uh-huh.
Now that we're through, and you have gone.
Yeah, you know, and of course, you're probably your own biggest critics when it comes to, you know, what did we do? And, you know, isn't it funny that when you get off stage sometimes you say, we sounded a little tired tonight. That's the night everybody mobs you and says you guys were great. And then
yeah,
you have another night, it's you're fabulous. Everybody goes,
Clarence is one of the most, he's almost a perfectionist. He does all the voicing.
Right.
So he's a perfectionist.
Right.
He doesn't cross my world because he knows I'm in some kind of world.
Yeah, you're in your own world. I know that.
But the guys, he requires so much.
Yeah.
Sometimes guys just get almost to tears when he puts so much pressure on them that they don't realize how many years he spent. Honing his profession.
Uh-huh.
So he wants to hear something that he has been taught to hear. And if he doesn't hear it, you know, like Robert just came. Robert just took Harold's place because Harold got a voice problem.
Yeah, I was going to say, how's the new kid?
Oh, great. Robert has three octaves. He can do baritone, bass, and tenor.
He says, I'm the new kid. I'm only 58.
Yeah.
he told me.
and Robert... You know, a class used to, I had to intercede sometimes because I could see Bob just almost to tears.
Uh-huh.
And I'm going, because he wants to do all right. That's what you're doing good, man. It's just certain things you have to just concentrate a little bit more and what we're trying to hear.
Well, I recorded the night at the Broward.
Just two kinds of people in the world.
Another thing is, like, everybody holding the note for the same length of time. If one guy drops off and the next guy drops off.
Faster. We call that completing the note.
Right.
Okay. That comes from breathing, too.
Oh, yeah.
Now, just gotta breathe. You're gonna be okay there.
Well, most people don't realize, when you're singing background, it's almost harder to sing than lead because you can take some breaths.
When I go in the background and I got to sing, like, you know, with the guys, well, maybe Robert's leading or Clarence is leading, it's another world back there.
You had a breath. You know, you can't, there's no, in other words,
you
got to be there.
Yeah. I got to blend, man. I'm going, oh, man, Oh, my goodness. And I'm trying to stay. And Ernest is so strong. His voice is the rock of this group.
Yes.
He's the metronome, man. You can lean on this guy in the middle of the night. He'll hit that note over and over again. He just doesn't miss.
So how do you like living in Vegas?
Oh, Vegas. I've been coming to Vegas for over 40-something years.
Yeah, me too. We stay at the Wynn, actually, you know, when we go. And
I lived there before when I was a bachelor back in the early 70s. And I lived here for 2 years. And it was a crazy time in my life. And then I came back again and I left. And I came back again with my wife.
Yeah.
And we moved here when my son passed away.
Right.
We just wanted to get out of California.
No, I can imagine.
So,
you know,
I couldn't think of a better place where all my friends were there. Bubba Knight was there. Gladys was there. Everybody I knew was in town. Lamont Macklemore, Fifth Dimension, were all living here.
Wow.
And they kept telling me, man, come on, man. You move to Vegas, man.
Yeah, but you know, my friends that live in Vegas, at the beginning, they all went out partying and running and going to the club, you know, and now they don't. It's like, nah.
Oh, yeah, if you work in the candy factory, pretty soon you don't eat the candy.
Yeah, right? No, I agree.
So we don't, most of what I like about here was just about 65% of the singers are here. They live here one more form or another, either half the time, some of the time, or most of the time. They're all here. Yeah, well, you know, me, I'm a show guy. I love shows. I just, a couple of my friends went to see Celine Dion. And they
were
how well the production is. And she's back. She's a great singer.
Oh, yeah.
And I go around town all the time. You know, I'm mooching. When you live in Vegas, you're an entertainer.
Oh, yeah.
You're looking for comps, baby.
Oh, you can't. I get plenty of comps. But I will tell you, we saw Cher the last time we were there.
You saw Cher?
Oh, man.
You know,
everybody
said it was a pretty good show.
Over the top. I mean, she has this thing. They pull out what they call Cher's closet, and that's how she gets to do her changes. She doesn't go off stage.
Yeah.
She says, oh, we're going to go back into Cher's closet, and they just bring it out, and it's just like a big box, looks like a closet, and then she comes out in another outfit.
Yeah.
But, man, let me tell you, we were like second row center. She looks great. She sounds great.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was really a great show. She does this thing with Sonny where they have Sonny on the screen.
Yeah, a lot of people doing that. The first time I ever seen that was done was by the Righteous Brothers.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when my man had passed away,
right.
And he had to keep doing the show, so they put together, because the technology is there, you can do that stuff.
I told Clarence I'm gonna email him a whole bunch of stuff, including the stuff that I recorded at the Broward. He's very interested in hearing that. He says, man, I want to hear what we did. I said,
well, you see what I told you about Clarence?
Yep.
He's going to be listening to this.
And I'm saying, Anthony probably doesn't want to hear it.
I don't care.
He says, because I heard it already. I was there.
once it goes into the airwaves, it's over for me. I'm looking for the next gig.
You know, you're absolutely right about that. So what would you like to say to the Imperials fans that are listening to this show?
Well, you know, we're very blessed and we're still here and we're in good health. And we don't look our age, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's true.
And don't act that way, ain't it? But we're from the old school. But what knocks me down is some of the people today I'm hearing about who are fans. I couldn't believe that I heard.
Right.
I mean, I heard stuff. Alicia Keys.
Uh-huh.
She learned a lot by listening to me as a child, young kid coming up.
Wow.
I go on and on, and you feel really good about that.
Oh yeah.
I hear all kinds of things coming back at us. I mean, I just ran into Frank Vincent, you know, in The Sopranos.
Right.
And Pesci and all those guys. We knew Pesci and we were all young.
Yeah, well, Pesci was, you know, he was a
player.
And he also was from the Jersey Rat Pack, you know.
All them guys out of there, and Frank Vincent played drums.
Right.
So they actually played behind us once at a place called the San Suzanne in Long Island.
Oh, I remember the San Suzanne very well. I was in Long Island. I went to Herrick's in Manhasset. I was a Long Island kid, sang at all those clubs.
Yeah, so we knew the guy. Ran into Frank Vincent. I did a cameo in a movie.
Uh-huh.
It's going to be out pretty soon. I forget the name of the movie.
Right.
Anyway, I did a cameo. And he was in the movie. He said, hey, man! And we start talking about all the old days and everything like that. And he said, well, you don't know, man. He says, Patch and them cats, man. He says, but let me tell you a little story. We were performing in 2006 at the Marriott Hotel here in Vegas.
Okay.
And the ballroom was packed.
Right.
Like 1,400 people in there.
Uh-huh.
And so after the show, I get this note. And the note says, Mr. Pacino would like to see us. I said, Pacino? Al Pacino? I know it's Al Pacino.
Yeah, it's the only one I know.
So when I went out to find him, this guy comes in and he says, my name is, what's his name? His brother's name, John Pacino.
Maybe.
I can't remember his name, but he's his brother. He says, look, Al was there in the back, and he was trying to be incognito.
Oh, wow.
When he came in town, he said, he loves y'all, man.
Wow.
And the same with De Niro. And we find these things like that. Now, we're going into Feinstein's.
Right.
And a lot of them, we've invited, and we don't know if they're going to show up or not, but we invited them. And Feinstein's a place where a lot of those kind of performances go.
Oh, absolutely.
So it always makes you feel good to know that your peers and people that are in the business know your work. So that tell the fans of Little Anthony and Pierce, one thing you will get from us, quality.
Absolutely.
Quantity. And we're not you can't label us. We don't have a label.
That's true.
We are we're street corner singers who grew up in the business and had the great pleasure of knowing people like Teddy Randazzo and Don Costa, influencing them, and Tom Bell and all these kind of people that have given us great respect.
You mean the great creative minds in the business?
Yes, creative people. And we have no limits on what we do. We're not limited to any one sound. If you want us to sing, if you want to call it duop, we could do that. If you want jazz, we'll sing jazz.
Right.
If we're not any particular thing. And to the fans of the Imperials, that's probably the reason why we survived so long.
I am sure that you're going to keep doing it. From what I heard at the Broward, and the enthusiasm still that you have, and what a lot of people don't realize about you is that you are funny.
Well, yeah,
you're funny, man. You have a sense of humor.
Hanging around with Red Fox too much, man. But I use humor.
Yeah.
I see things funny when I'm on stage. There's a whole new world out there. And my mind sees things, it comes out of my mouth.
What I was saying is that from what I heard at the Broward,
yeah.
I know you're going to keep doing it until you can't do it anymore.
No, we're old school, we're performers. We are vaudevillians, man. We're
right.
Saloon singers. You know that, man.
Yeah,
we come
yeah.
out of that world.
No, I know.
And so we have to relate to the audience, and that's what we do.
Right.
Nobody's doing that today, and maybe a lot of people forgot that's how it was done. But it's a quality in show business, I think it should always be there. And I've had people come to me and say, please, keep on doing that.
Oh,
because you're the last ones that we can come and see out of the traditions of the Rat Pack and all of those people that we came up in our lives. You give us that thing that we were impressed by, you know?
Well, I understand that you went back to visit your favorite bench in Fort Greene Park in Brooklyn recently.
They did a thing on us on CBS Sunday morning.
That must have been a threat.
Back in 2009, and they followed us all the way to the store we used to come in as kids called
wow.
Sarge's, but it's not called Sarge's anymore.
Wow.
And we brought the cameras in there. People, they went, who's that? What's going on here?
Hey, did the same girls show up?
No, man. Maybe I don't want to see them.
No, they came with their walkers.
right. So we had to go to the park, and Don
right.
of the bench ain't there.
Uh-huh.
The lamp is still over the bench.
Wow.
And when we carved our names and stuff, still there.
Unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
And so I heard that they're pulling some of the benches out, but they're not going to touch that one.
I don't know. because all the little groups in town use that bench. Well, that was the only lamppost that was definitely over the bench.
Yeah, but you need to go take it, you know, like they used to take the seats from Yankee Stadium.
Yeah,
that needs to be in the archives, man.
I don't know, man, but I know it was there, and I just was amazed to come back and find a bench that's been over 50 years still there.
Wow.
With the same markings of I Love June and this
wow.
one. I was here, Kilroy.
And I wonder how many I'll bet you that Mike Tyson probably beat somebody up and threw him on that bench.
Maybe he did, you know. Yeah, that Tyson, man, and, you know, that's ludicrous, ludicrous.
Well, he's...
I know Mike, he's a good guy.
Yeah, when I went to LIU, you know, and everything, and after a few years after that, they used to hear about this kid, Mike Tyson, that used to float around that area.
Well, he hung around, he came out of the Bed-Stuy.
Yeah.
But I don't care what nobody says. The best-looking chicks in the world, man, were down in Fort Greene. What it was about Fort Greene with all them young girls, man. But they were the best. And they were drawing everybody.
Wow.
And that's why the gangs used to get into so many fights, because it was their territory.
Oh, are you kidding? It's always a better one.
They used to come out of the Farragut Project. I think it's because there's a mixture of people in that area.
Uh-huh.
Puerto Ricans, Italians,
right.
Jewish,
right.
blacks. It's just a combination of beautiful women.
No, I understand.
They all go to the schools. I mean, I went to, remember Girls High was next to Boys High.
Yeah, well, it's girls and boys now, right?
Yeah, and I think, didn't Barbra Streisand go to either Eastern District or Erasmus?
She went to Erasmus.
Erasmus?
Yes.
And all those guys came, and I mean, it just was a bevy of
Yeah, Kenny went to Erasmus also. Kenny Rosenberg Vance.
Yeah, Kenny Vance. I was just talking to him the other day.
Yeah.
So it was like Kenny used to come down to Fort Greene, but everybody went where you can be heard.
Right.
And that park, Fort Greene Park, which is a very famous park, by the way, if any historians out there. This was the headquarters of George Washington.
Right.
During the revolution, when he got beat and run out of New York City. That was where his headquarters was.
Right.
So that park is a very famous park. It has a lot of history, a lot of great people who were there in that park, who for one reason or another, man, they came there. Frankie Lyman used to come to that park.
Right.
He came out of New York, a stick up in Harlem. But he would come down with those guys. Green is just a remarkable place, and that's where Jay-Z comes out. Jay-Z comes out of next door, which is Marcy Projects. Where Fort Greene ends, you go about up Myrtle Avenue.
Right.
You see about maybe 12 blocks is Marcy.
Uh-huh.
So you got Marcy, Fort Greene, Farragut Projects.
Right.
The Farragut's down on Navy Street, near the Brooklyn Navy Yard.
Right.
Right? Well, a lot of these rappers and people don't realize coming out of there.
No kidding.
In fact, we came out of there. And well, we don't know what it is.
Well, I remember that neighborhood. I mean, you know, of course, you know, being at LIU, I mean, that was a pretty that was a pretty happening neighborhood.
He was right there, man. You know, that's become an art neighborhood now. I mean, very creative people now live there.
You had Fortunoffs. You had, you know, down the block, you had all of those places, you know.
I mean, it's like big-time educated world now, man.
Oh, I know.
Man, the hood is ain't there much anymore, man. The colleges all got it. And all the creative people, painters, artists.
Uh-huh.
I went over there and said, gee, this store has changed. You know, they got some great restaurants over there, man.
Yeah.
Gosh, you know what tech school is? Tech High?
Brooklyn Tech?
What's the, What's the name of that? There's a street that Ashford or somebody.
Oh, yeah, okay.
All these restaurants, man, and these very high-end stuff is over there.
It's been my pleasure to talk to one of my heroes, Anthony Guardine. Little Anthony from the Imperials, thank you so much for being my guest on the Harmony Street Show, Anthony, man. It was just my pleasure.
Mike. Real fun.
Yeah, me too. And I'll talk to you very soon.
Yes, cool.
Okay.
Hi. If you haven't recognized my voice, let me tell you who I am. My name is Jimmy Merchant, original founding member of Frankie Lyman and the Teenagers, the co-writer of Why Do Fools Fall in Love, our biggest hit. But your biggest hit is Mike Miller, and you're listening to him right now on the Harmony Street Show. Keep listening. And like I said, folks, you're listening to Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show.
Hi, this is Lloyd Price, and you're listening to my good friend Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show.
Clarence?
What's up, man?
I just spent like an hour and 20 minutes with Anthony. And man, he just went on and on, man.
He's a good interviewer, man. He's a good he can rap, man.
Yeah, but you know what?
What did he mean?
He spent half the time just telling me how talented you were.
Not me. I'm not that talented.
Yeah, but that's what he said, man. So, take me back to the early days, if you can. By the way,
like a song to me. Take me back.
Take me back to the beginning when you're in Brooklyn and you're singing on the street corner, and you're in Fort Greene Park singing in front of the bench, and all those pretty girls were there. What was happening?
On the street corners and underneath the all the girls standing around. You know.
Yeah.
I had a group. My group was called. Anthony was in another group.
Right.
His group was called the DuPonts, and my group was called the Chesters. Which didn't mean nothing. Nevertheless, during that time, I was like 12 or 13, something like that. And I formed this group, and the first guy I got in the group was Ernest Wright.
Right.
Next guy was Tracy Lord.
Uh-huh.
And another guy named Gloucester Rogers. And another guy, it was five of us, another guy named Junior who passed away.
Uh-huh.
And also Tracy Lord passed away also
right.
A couple of years ago. Nonetheless, to make a long story longer, I had this group, and we used to sing on the corners. And one day, you know, I used to go to the Paramount Theater, what we were talking about earlier.
Right, because I went to LIU, and that was the Paramount Theater.
Exactly.
That was it.
So I went to the Paramount, and there was a group, a bunch of, everybody was there, like Frankie Lyman and the Teenagers, the Valentines.
Right.
I mean, just all these fabulous groups and stuff, the Chuckles. And I'll never forget none of this stuff. And I used to go over there, and there was a gentleman named Richard Barrett.
Right.
He was there, and he used to be in a group called the Valentines. And they were really cool. I knew he was a producer because he produced the Chantels.
Right.
Produced all these other people. And I went, and I used to kick him on his ankle, man. Listen to my group. And he used to get kind of like...
Just like it is in the movies, you know?
This is like, exactly what it is. And every time that they came to the Paramount, that's what I used to do. So one day he got tired of me doing that, bruising up his ankles, and he said, look, man, just come on down my office. And I said, well, where is it? And we wrote it down. It was 1650 Broadway.
Uh-huh.
And Sir Ernest, myself, Tracy, and we all went down there.
Right.
And we sang Two People in the World.
Right, wow.
Ernest wrote first.
Right.
I mean, he wrote the... He,
I mean, right as in Ernest, right.
Yeah, Ernest, yeah, he wrote the song.
Right.
But he didn't have a bridge.
No kidding.
So we went there, and we sang for Richard.
Right.
And he goes, you know, you guys sound really good, but...
You need a bridge.
you need a bridge, and you need another lead singer, because Ernest is being lead. So he says, do you have that guy? And I go, yeah, I got the guy, you know.
Yeah.
And so we ran back. We got on the train, went back to Brooklyn, saw Anthony. And I go, I know you and another group, man. You know, we used to live right across the yard from each other.
Right.
I know you're in a group called DuPonts, but we got a contract with George Golner, man, Richie Barrett, man, blah, blah, blah.
Flamingos, you know, come on, man.
Right, the Flamingo, everybody. He goes, what? Are you kidding me? I go, yeah, man, I'm telling you, man. So we rehearsed for about a week.
Wow.
Went back that afternoon after the rehearsal, about a week or two.
Right.
And then we sang Two People in the World for him in the office, and they took us in the studio right away.
I can imagine. So I would have done the same thing, man.
And we recorded, Richard Barrett wrote the bridge.
Wow.
Two People in the World.
Uh-huh.
Boy Meets Girl and Love Begins. Oh, what a feeling you get from within. With that, and Ernest wrote the rest of the part.
Wow. Well, you know, when you're inspired, it comes out real fast, you know?
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely. That was during that time that romance was beautiful, man. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's beautiful now, but it's a little different.
Well, that music in those days was about boy loves girl, boy loses girl, boy finds girl again, breaks your heart, comes, you know, it's like it was different.
It was different. But for some reason, Mike, it had a feel to it. And, you know, then George had a song, George Golner, who owned the company,
right,
had a song called Tears on My Pillow. And
I've heard that.
Yeah. Well, that was the hit. You know, right. It was a two-sided hit.
You bet.
On my pillow, pain in my heart, caused by you. Love is not a gadget, love is not a toy. When you find the one you love, she'll fill your heart with joy. If we could start anew, in my heart, for by you.
You.
Oh,
you.
Oh,
you.
Oh,
you. And back in those days, you know, with the 45, that was big time.
Right.
Matter of fact, the first record, Tears on My Pillow, was on a 78.
Uh-huh.
And that's when 45 came out, and then they changed it.
Well, that 78 is almost as big a collector's item as the Fire Burns No More.
I got a bunch of those, man. I got a bunch of 78s, man. I collect this and that, all kinds of garbage. Uh-huh. And so, and that's what launched it off. And there was a gentleman there named Lou Galley.
Uh-huh.
He goes, you know what? What does Chester mean? I said, that's just a guy's name. He goes, well, I think you should change it to the Imperial.
Wow.
You guys are Imperial.
Uh-huh.
And we changed it to Imperial, and when it was playing on WINS and Wins Television Radio in New York,
1010 Wins New York.
I heard about Alan Freed.
Yeah.
Some guy called up and said, "Who's that girl singing Tears on My Pillow?"
Wow.
And Alan Freed said, "That's not a little girl. That's Little Anthony."
Oh.
And that's how the name got to Little Anthony and the Imperials.
Unbelievable.
Kept it that way. Yeah.
Nothing more, let's forget. The fires burn no more, the fires burn no more.
No more.
Into the night, to love is warm. We held hands as we talked. Nothing more, let's forget. The fires burn no more, the fires burn no more.
Uh-huh. Here we are in 2011.
Yeah, but
the same original guys.
Which is amazing.
Yeah, which is amazing. And Tracy, of course, passed away.
Right.
But the other guy, Gloucester Rogers, he's still alive.
And right.
He doesn't sing anymore.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, I'll tell you, just as a point of interest, you know, The Fire Burns No More, that's a collector's item, you know?
It is. Anthony wrote that song.
Unbelievable.
That was the Chesters. That
right.
was our first, actually... The Fires Burn No More was actually our first record out in New York.
And that was a great tune.
Yeah.
You know, Anthony's modest about
it. It didn't do nothing.
Anthony says, I was a kid.
I was one of those guys that never stopped.
He,
you know,
well, you
I
know,
wanted big time.
Anthony said, you're the brains. That's what he told me.
We all we all get together, and we put it all together for ourselves. You know what I mean? Sometimes we make mistakes, sometimes, but at least we make them together.
Yeah, but you know what's really funny is too. Sometimes a group comes along that's so special, and the blend is so perfect. Because I was talking about this with Anthony, you can take four or five really good singers and put them in a room. It doesn't necessarily mean you're going to have a group. You know, it's very hard to find a bunch of guys that find each other spiritually and find each other vocally. And understand each other enough to get a blend that's a real blend. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, absolutely, I do.
You know,
I mean, when I was a kid, I learned how to play piano when I was like 6 years old.
Yeah, which is great because you have a point of reference for the triads. You know, stripping down the chord. You know,
exactly.
You know,
you got it. So, because my dad was a piano player, Anthony's guy was a horn player. And he played in this big band, Buddy Johnson,
Buddy Johnson
band,
yeah.
which was a big band during that time.
Right.
And so I used to learn with the harmony, my whole family. My sister used to sing with the group, Etta James, and she used to have a group called the Peaches.
Wow.
And my sister sang in that group. And then wow. I have another sister who sang in a group called the Aladdins. They had a couple of records out.
Oh, yeah, I remember them, of course.
Yeah. And so me coming, you know, being younger than both of them, you know, and my brother who played the sax, we just did run that piano, and we used to sing harmonies and put notes together all the time.
Right.
So when I formed the group, that was my thing, man. I used to know I can hear harmony notes from everywhere.
Wow.
Close ones, far ones, all I can hear it. It's just embedded in me. Of course, I studied a little music and it helps even much more today.
Yeah. Well, I'm a vocal arranger too, you know, so I know what you're talking about. How many times you get a guy in the room, you know, and he's singing, he says, that's what we did on the street corner, and you're saying, but it's not in the chord. And he's saying, yeah, but that's the way we did it. And you say, but it's discord, man. It's not in the chord.
Exactly.
Here's your note over here. No, this is not. Here's your note, trust me. Do-do-do-do. Here it is. You know.
Yeah, well, I remember one time Anthony goes told me one day, he goes, man, I got your note. I said, well, go ahead and sing it. Mm. And it wasn't the note. I go, this is the note. And he goes, oh, yeah, it is. You know, it's like, for some reason, I guess God just blessed me with that kind of ear to hear all that kind of stuff.
I know, you know, I'm that way, too, and I've been through that, you know. I arranged it, you know, in a lot of different ways. I was telling Anthony, when I had the Harmony Street group, we were very lucky. It's a long story how we got into this position, but we got to sing at the White House a bunch of times for the Clintons, and they invited us, you know, and we were the entertainment for the Christmas party in 98, you know, at the White House for then.
It was beautiful, man.
Oh, yeah, and it was wonderful.
I was singing for the president.
Oh, yeah, you know, he was wonderful to talk to. And through that, because we lived in Connecticut, Terry Stewart from the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame lived in Stamford, Connecticut, and he had been the CEO of Marvel Industries, you know, Marvel Comics, Spider-Man, and all of that. And
Terry very well.
Yeah, when the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame people asked him to jump, he jumped in a heartbeat. His house looks like a jukebox anyway.
Smart man.
We became very good friends with him, and I was, you know, I was thinking about, you know, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I mean, that's it, man. When you get there, it's like you've arrived at the place.
And you know what? As far as we were concerned, man, we should have got there a little faster. But
I agree.
You know why? It's all the politics back during that time, and but we're there now, and it's a marvelous feeling to be recognized and honored like that. You know what I'm saying?
Well,
I was just like, I can't believe that we're there. You know what I mean?
I know. I told Anthony, I said, you know, Terry told me, listen, I only get one vote. He said, believe it or not, I only get one vote. And there's a lot of people that shouldn't be in there that are in there, and a lot of people that should be in there and there are not in there. So, you know, it's not a perfect situation. I mean,
I think that when they pick artists like that,
yep,
should all sit down together and listen to the music.
Oh, yeah.
They should go back and pick out the songs and go, well, this one was a hit, this one was a hit, this one, and they sound good enough to put in there, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I rolled through the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and I've seen some acts that were on the screen. I don't know if you did this, Mike, but I was saying to myself, who is that?
Right, yeah, I know. Well, you know, it's funny. He told us a story one night, because we were at a party, his New Year's party, you know, in 98, 99. And he's a funny guy. He said, 12 o'clock came, everybody started the countdown. And he said, no, he stopped everybody. He says, I make the rules in my house. And he didn't do the countdown until 3 o'clock in the morning. So, you know, but he said to me a funny story. He said, Davy Jones from the Monkees calls him up every year and says, why am I not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? And Terry always tells him, you can answer that. You can answer that yourself.
Terry is funny, man.
You know, and he says,
and every time I see him, we go and hang out together. And
oh, yeah.
Talk, man. He's a good guy.
He's a very good guy. He invited Paulette and I out there 2 years ago to be his guest and everything. And Paulette had a kidney stone attack the night before and had kidney stone surgery the next day. And we didn't make it out there, so we still have to go.
Goodness.
We still have to go. And
You gotta go, man. Now you gotta go. He's a good dude, man. You'd love.
Oh yeah.
He's like anywhere he becomes. If he comes to Vegas, if he comes to New York, and we're there, we just go. He comes to places that we're at.
Oh.
Just to be around us, man.
Well, he loves the oldies. You know, as a matter of fact, he had other parties, and he calls me up and he says, "You know what, man? I was gonna have the Harptones." He says, "But I want you." But he says, "I want Harmony Street to come and sing a couple of tunes instead." I says, "Are you kidding me?" He goes, "No, I mean it, because you know, we with the three girls, you know, we had a pretty unique sound, you know." I was telling Anthony, and I reminded you about this. It's got to be 20 some odd years ago. It was a show at Palisades Park. We had Harmony Street with the three girls. We had Don K. Reed was backstage. Brucey was there. Hal Jackson was in the audience, and we asked him to come back. And I kept trying to get Anthony to take my cassette tape of Harmony Street, and I kept handing it to him. He kept putting it down on the table, and I said, "Nah, he's never going to take this. I mean, he keeps just like, you know, it's not sticking to his hand." So I put it into his bag. So I knew that when he got home back to California, he'd open it and go, "What's this?" 2 months later, I get a phone call.
You remember?
Oh, yeah, he remembered. Of course, he remembered because the other night at the Broward, I reminded him of it, you know, when I went inside and he was actually sitting there in his socks and I'm telling him this story. And I said to him, "Do you remember?" I says, and I get a phone call 2 months later and it's a woman's voice and she says, "Mike Miller." And I said, "Yeah." And she says, "My husband wants to talk to you." And I said, "Who's your husband?" She goes, "Little Anthony." I says, "Well, what are you waiting for? Put him on." And he says to me, "You know something?" He says, "I listened to your tape." He says, "You guys are really good." He says, "I just want you to know, I did listen to your tape, and you guys lay very, very good." And I said, "Wow, it's like, are you kidding me, man? That's like handing me gold. Little Anthony telling me that I can sing good? I mean, give me a break."
You guys do sing good, man.
That was a good night, you know.
Very, very, yeah. No, it wasn't a good night.
Yeah.
You know, it was a good night, yeah, but every day is a good night when you wake up in the morning. But the thing is, when one person and they calls you and tells you that.
Yeah.
That means that you got something. I don't know. Are you still singing?
I'll tell you. I left Harmony Street. Here's the story. This is an interesting story. It was about 12 years ago. I lost my mother, my brother, and my father. They were all sick down in Florida. I had my Harmony Street group. We had 20 concerts left to go. I was a dean in a junior high school. I was so distraught because I had lost my entire immediate family to three different illnesses. I retired from the job. I quit my Harmony Street group. I came down to Florida, which they all were. And I was just like a zombie for a while, you know, because I just needed a change. And I had my daughters, but, you know, that they were up north. And so what happened was George Galfo called me up and said, "You know, you want to be in the Mystics?" And I said, "I don't think I can sing right now. You know, I'm feeling too bad." So we started rehearsing everything. I became part of that version of the Mystics. And I arranged all their harmony. And I wrote a tune called "Hushabye" again, as a matter of fact, which is out on Collectibles.
Yeah.
And
that's a great song, man.
Yeah. Oh, did you hear it?
Yeah.
I think I sent it to you.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah. Yeah, cool.
I don't know if I listened to everything.
Yep. And so, what's funny is, you know, here I'm back singing and whatever. And then, of course, I met Paulette, and she was coming to the shows. And it's very hard to have a brand new marriage, and you're running around the country, and you're calling like 1 o'clock in the morning after the show. But anyway, so you know, I left, you know, whatever, they're doing their thing. And I do a solo thing called "Do Up Stylings" by Mike Miller, and I make all my own tracks in the studio, and I go out and every once in a while I run out. But about 2.5 years ago, somebody said, "Why don't you get into radio?" So there was an internet radio station down here, and they invited me in. I did 6 months with them. I went on my own, and then all of a sudden, all these stations started calling me up and saying, "Oh, come with us!" And so I feed out to about 10 different shows right now. And I've decided that I'm going to do mostly interviews because that's where I can talk to the guys that I have camaraderie with and talk about things that we have in common and talk to a lot of my friends. Like if I talk to Larry Chance or if I talk to Jimmy Beaumont, we can talk about, "Oh, remember that time be backstage when you spilled your drink," or, you know, and it's much more real that way, you know. So
Larry is my buddy. We work together a lot.
Oh yeah, Larry's he's crazy.
Yeah, man, he's a sweetheart.
Do you know that years ago, Larry Figueredo, Larry Chance, Larry Figueredo from Philly. Do you know that Larry sat right in front of Ernest Evans, a chubby checker in the junior high, in the elementary school in Philly.
Really?
And yeah, he was originally born, before he moved to the Bronx. He went to elementary school in Philly, and he said Frankie Avalon and Bobby Rydell were both in his school also, and the two of them played the trumpet, and they used to walk home together with their little trumpet cases from elementary school. Two of them. Absolutely, yeah.
Hi, this is Larry Chance of the Earls, and you're listening to, one of my dearest friends on earth, Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show. One of my dearest friends, Mike Miller. Yeah.
That's beautiful, man. Yeah. I love stories like that.
Yeah, you know, and so, you know, so then I was doing the radio show, and it's a good thing. Larry Chance had a studio in the Bronx called The Bronx Connection. And it was with Butch Barbella and Chaz Palminteri. The three of them had the studio. And Chaz, you know, from A Bronx Tale, Chaz was originally a doo-wop guy.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he had a group called Razzmatazz in the Bronx.
No, I didn't know
that. He was a singer. Oh, absolutely. So, okay, you know, you're with the Chesters, and then all of a sudden, you know, here's Anthony and George Goldner and... let me ask you this, knowing George Goldner, how much did you deal with Morris Levy?
Well, I really didn't deal with Morris Levy that much. During that time, Anthony went on his own, and Anthony signed a contract with Morris Levy. And now I can tell you a story about that. After a while, Morris never did anything. You know, Morris, you know, figured, well, he's over. He ain't going to get no way.
All he did was put his name on
Morris
stuff.
Goldner.
He put his
George
name on stuff.
Give him his whole catalog.
Right.
And so what happened was, one day we ran across Teddy Randazzo.
Right.
And you know who Teddy was, don't you?
Oh, of course. The Chuckles.
Teddy was Chuckles.
Right.
And then he did some movies back, way Alan Freed movies.
Oh, yeah.
Back. I don't know if you remember that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All right. To make a long story long again.
Right.
He went to get a release from Morris Levy, and they bodily threw him out of his office.
Wow.
To have him on Broadway. So he went back. And he told Don Costa and Teddy that he couldn't get a release.
Right.
So he goes, oh, just a minute. He picked the phone up. Don picked the phone up. And he called this guy. And then he says, tell the kid, go down there, and he'll get a release.
Right.
The guy he called was Frank Sinatra.
Wow.
And then, yeah. And Sinatra, so Anthony went back down there. They welcomed him in. Morris Levy welcomed him in the office.
Wow.
You know, and gave him the release. And that's when we put out On the Outside Looking In.
Wow.
I'm on the outside looking in, and I wanna be back on the inside with you. You are with somebody new, and I don't know what to do, 'cause I'm still in love with you. I'm on the outside looking in. I don't wanna be left on the outside all alone. Well, I guess I've had my day, and you let me go my way. Now it's me who has to pay. I never should have gone away. I never should have gone away and left you like I did, with tears in your eyes. I thought you'd take me back, but now, to my surprise, I'm on the outside looking in. Gotta find a way back to your heart, dear. Once again, Won't you take me back again? I'll be waiting here till then, on the outside looking in. Won't you take me back again? I'll be waiting here till then, on the outside looking in. On the outside looking in.
Absolutely not. It's those little inside stories that people find fascinating because they don't know. They think you just get up and you stand in front of a mic and you put out the record and some DJ plays it and you know, that's it. But, you know, all of the little behind-the-scenes things are what the music business is all about. You know, the things said and things done that nobody just knows about. There's one thing I'm actually dying to ask you because, you know, over the years I've had every kind of group and I did a lot of recording at Media Sound and I had a disco group for a while. And one of the tunes that we used to do was a tune called Who's Gonna Love Me? And it had such amazing percussion in it and a little cowbell and go-go bell going and whatever. But the thing that really blew me away with this tune, and I'll tell you, interestingly enough, because I had Cuba Gooding Jr.
How did you know Who's Gonna Love Me?
Because we used to sing it. But, you know, the thing that blew me away about that tune was every time we came to it, it said, you can't take the car, take the kids. And that line used to blow me away.
Don't take the car, take the kids, take all these bills on the table.
Exactly right. And I said to myself, you know, it's, I had, believe it or not, I had Cuba Gooding's grandkids in my school. I was a dean in the Bronx for 30 years in a junior high school. And I had Cuba Gooding's grandkids. And there's a long story behind that. It's not a great story because, you know, whatever. And I won't tell you that story because it's not for public consumption. But I had Cuba in my office many times. And I told him, we used to do his tune, too. You know, okay, so your heart is broken. You sit around.
Right.
And I would say to myself, I loved all of those little talking intros, you know, whatever, but you can't take the car, take the kids. I mean, you know, it's like, what a line, man. I said, I wish I had thought of that.
Where you going, baby? No, you can't take the car. Take the kids. Take all these bills on the table over here. We've been together too long for you to walk out on me now. Well, baby, who's gonna love me when you're gone? Who's gonna need me? Let me know. I know I haven't always been true, but I never meant you no harm. If you just brought to stay with me, I'll never ever leave your arms. Baby, who's gonna love me when you go? Who's gonna need me? Let me know. I've got my future to think of. Where will I go? What will I be? You just give me one more chance, I'll be a changed man, you'll see. Baby, who's gonna love me when you go? Who's gonna need me? Let me know. Who's gonna love me
me, need me, baby.
Be like one of those northern soul hits in Europe, you know?
Yeah.
Because
you went over there. We stayed over there so long.
Wow.
it was great though.
Yeah, but you know what?
I like that line too.
That was a great tune. I mean, the harmony in that tune was impeccable. It's, you know, I'm not sure how much it moved up in the charts, but it was like very big in the discos.
Yeah, it was. It did very well. You know who actually backed that song? Chris Blackwell.
Oh, no kidding. I didn't know.
He had, we knew Chris from Bob Marley. We used to tour with Bob Marley a lot. And just the Imperials.
Wait a minute, woman. You can't keep walking in and out of my life like this. You walked out of here last month and I took you back in. Every time things get a little rough, you want to pack your bag. Life doesn't work that way, sweetheart. Listen. There you go again, girl, saying that you're leaving, saying that you're tired of this man. Don't you know I love you more than before, girl? My love will only bring you happiness. Silly girl, don't try to make it on your own. You don't know what you're confess I felt the same way too. But deep in my heart, girl, even when we're apart, girl, I know there's no one but you. Silly girl, don't try to make it on your own. There's someone for everyone. But we're gonna find somebody. Where you gonna find somebody like me, girl? Where you gonna find somebody? Where you gonna find somebody like me, girl? Yeah.
before you hit that tree. You ain't gonna find nobody out there just like me. I love you, baby. I'll put up with all your time. I'll put up with anything you wanna do, girl. But just don't leave me, baby. Ain't nobody out there gonna love you just like I do. Where you gonna find me? Where you gonna find me, girl?
So, well, you know, I spent time with Bob Marley and Peter Tosh at Media Sound years ago.
Peter Tosh, all those guys, yeah. We had the greatest time.
I'll bet.
Always wanted me to smoke ganja.
Yeah, I'll bet.
Because I want that. I can't go on the stage doing that kind of garbage.
No.
But that was their thing, man.
They're used to it.
But it was, yeah. I was.
No, you'd be two sentences behind, you know. It's like...
Two. I mean, like four.
Right.
Yeah, nevertheless, it was a great, I love that song. And heck, we made some good money on it. I mean, we went all over to Europe with that thing.
Who wrote that song?
In Japan and
who
over Europe.
And I still don't know who sang lead on that song.
Oh, okay. It was a guy in my group. His name was Bobby Wade.
Oh, okay.
Right? And when Sammy went with the OJs.
Right.
We had to get another singer. Anthony went on his own. So,
right.
You know, I own the name of Imperials, right. Anthony Imperial. Uh-huh. So, you know, well, you know, we could stay in Vegas.
Yeah, you rascal, you.
So, we went, and I got this guy, Bobby Wade.
Right.
Richard Barrett introduced me to. And then we went, and we went in the studio, and we recorded Who's Gonna Love Me, and then we just toured all over Europe. You know, Bobby Wade was a good dude, and then eventually, you know, he didn't want to sing anymore, so he lives in Seattle now.
Uh-huh. People who live in Seattle love Seattle, and I'm saying, so far away from everything, you know, but
no,
they
man,
love it.
You know what, in Seattle, it just rains too much for me. I mean, I've got to have some kind of sunshine. That's why I live in Vegas.
Yeah, no, hey, listen, you know, we go to Vegas all the time. I was telling Anthony, we stay at the Wynn. My wife loves it there.
She's having fun, man.
Yeah, you know.
That's what you come to Vegas for, to have fun, you know.
Oh, yeah.
That's all it's about.
And we, the last time we saw Manilow, we saw Cher. She was over the top.
Yeah. Well, next time you come in town, man, give me a call.
Oh, are you kidding me? Absolutely. I mean, you know, we go every once in a while. And now that our youngest daughter is in Newport Beach, she just moved out there, got a job, got engaged. Her fiancé has a job, and Paulette's out there right now because they're putting a new house together. And you know, mom has to go out and, you know, help her daughter through it. But
the whole thing.
What's funny is that, you know, I'm very good friends with Lenny Welch. And every time we go out there, we threaten to get together with Lenny. And Lenny is always on a cruise. Every time we go out there, he's on a cruise. He says, I can't meet you. We can't go out for Italian because I'm in Alaska. You know? So, okay.
He does a lot of cruises, man.
Yeah, he does.
So, yeah.
You know, I'll tell you.
I don't know how he does it all, but
Lenny couldn't have been the next Johnny Mathis, man. You know, he frustratedly told me that he was handled wrong. He says, you know, I spent 7 years driving a cab in New York. You know, I just got fed up. I said, man, some of his early stuff was like over the top.
Oh, man. Are you kidding me?
You know?
I love Lenny Welch, man.
Hi, this is Lenny Welch, and you're listening to my good friend Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show.
What a great singer.
He's got a tune called My One Sincere, which is a doo-wop-y thing, man. It just blows me away. Another tune, Congratulations, Baby. He said to me, you know, it's a flip side. And I said, you know, wow, and the group behind you is so great. And he says, I don't even know who that group was, he said, because the track was already there. He says, I did it to the track. So I looked it up. It was the Halos, you know, because they did a lot of studio work. And he says, you know something? I didn't even know that. He says...
Yeah, the Halos were good, too, man. They were very good.
Yeah.
I love the way they sing.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's a lot of groups out
and
there.
And believe it or not, did you know that Billy Reid sang bass with the Halos for a while?
No.
Yeah. Billy Reid was the bass on Pretty Little Angel Eyes.
I didn't know that either.
Yeah. Yeah, he did a lot of, he showed up in a lot of places where you didn't know, you know.
Well, we used to hang out. He came out here one time. I just saw him down in Florida.
Yeah, we were all in backstage together.
That's right.
Yeah.
And Bill and I, we used to hang. We used to, I mean, he's a nice man.
He is. You know, it's like, he comes out, it's like.
You know who else is a nice guy?
Jay Siegel.
Yeah. We were like 15. we were 15 together. And I remember going in, him and his other buddies, and they were recording.
The Margo Brothers.
The Chiffons.
Oh, yeah, the Chiffons, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the Chiffons, man. And, then we used to hang out, man. We were talking about it the other day. We saw each other.
Oh, yeah. Well, he always used to tell me backstage, he says, I invented Jew-Wop, you know. And I said, Jew-Wop. And he said, Jew-Wop. And I said, yeah, he did say that. And he said, you know, only kidding. And I said, no, you're wrong, because the Flamingos were all Orthodox Jews, because I was on with Don K. Reed.
Right.
The Flamingos went on before us, and Zeke and Jake were on, and they said to me, you know, because they all wear Star of David, and I said to him, you know, and he said, yeah, we're the whole group, very Orthodox Jews. And
Terry Johnson, yeah.
But Terry's name is a biblical name, too. His real name is Isaiah. So
Isaiah?
Yeah, he lives right down the block from me, Terry.
Hi, this is Terry Johnson of the Flamingos, and you're listening to Mike Miller and the Harmony Street Show.
Yeah, I know it.
In Florida, yeah.
Do you live in Clearwater or what?
No, I'm south. I'm like, I have a place in Boca. I have a place in Boca, and I also have a place in Wellington.
Okay.
So the Imperials, Clarence, are as good as they've ever been. And I remember going back 35 years ago, watching the group when they used to wear the white gloves and the choreography.
Boat in the Dark.
You know.
That's another thing that Richard Berry did. Richard Berry was a great guy, man.
Choreography and the white gloves. I mean, and not only that. I mean, you know, you can't be humble when you're talking to me, because, you know, I mean, I'm sure that you realize how special, you know, you guys were over the years, because, you know, two kinds of people at the Broward after all these years. I mean, you could hear a pin drop, and every note was perfect.
You say it was. You know, we just go up there and sing it.
Yeah, just go up and do it. Oh. I know, because it's like something that you do all the time. What's in store for the Imperials now? I mean, you guys going to go back in and record?
Yeah, we always record. We have.
You don't know how thrilled I am to just have been backstage after all that time, and just get a chance to see you guys. And I will tell you that what you did at the Broward, I mean, it's every bit of it is still there, better than ever. And the people really appreciated it, because they were standing and clapping for a long time, you know. And I'm sure you get that almost every place you go, and it must feel really good.
It does feel good, man. And I'm glad that we can still sing, you know what I mean? We're getting a little older, but we don't feel that, you know, that feeling, you know? I don't even know, man. I mean, Anthony, we've been around since 1958.
Right.
What year that is?
Right. I know.
I mean,
it's a lifetime.
So we just go out there and we have fun, man. And when we can't do it no more, that's when we retire. I think that people want, no matter what, they want good entertainment. Man.
Right.
They want you to sound good.
Oh, yeah.
They want that.
Are you kidding me?
You can't go out there if you don't have it anymore.
Are you kidding me? The aficionados, you know, they'll come right back up to you after the show, you know, and they will tell you, hey, man, when you did it tonight, you know, on the record, you did this, this, and this. And when you did it tonight, you did that and that. I mean, these aficionados, they got this stuff imprinted. They want to hear it exactly like they heard it when they were 13 years old, like with the ear to the
radio. Right.
It's like amazing. And they'll hold you to it.
They do.
You know?
It's no joke, man. They're serious.
You know, one of my favorites, and I discussed this with Anthony, was Out of Sight, Out of Mind. And, you know, that was always one that stood out with me. And there were several tunes. You know, the one of the things about the Imperials were the fact that they were very eclectic, man. You guys could go from a really steamy ballad to an up-tempo tune to, there was a tune, I mean, all the a cappella groups that I was in, and I was with a group called the Islanders. We were on the Best of a cappella series on Relic and everything. And one tune that I did not hear at the Broward, one tune that I did not discuss with Anthony, was Traveling Stranger. Was a tune that groups used to do on the street corner, and that's one of the tunes. There was a short list of about three tunes that separated the good groups from the not so good groups. If you could pull off Traveling Stranger, then people said, whoa, you know. I mean, that was a tune that that every a cappella group, you know, separated the men from the boys, and I forgot about that.
Traveling Stranger, man, is Anthony wrote that song on a train.
Wow.
And I came up with Dominum in the background.
Right.
And we had Ernest and I both, we had the background
right
done already, you know.
Uh-huh.
And then Anthony just, we got this other song called, we don't even have a name for it, man. Let's do the background and did the background. And
uh-huh.
Then Anthony sang, went home and he wrote the lyric to that one. And,
wow.
And he wrote it on the train, actually. And came back and said, I got the lyric. For some reason, I don't know why, every a cappella group loved that song.
I did it with every group that I ever had. And, you know, it's just, because it's, you got to be able to sing in order to sing it, you know?
Yeah.
If you can't sing, don't even go there.
You got it.
That song is for singers.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, man.
You know, and I don't know what, you know, all day I'm thinking about, you know, okay, you know, we're going to talk about the Imperials. And all day that kind of just slipped my mind. And I said to myself, I said, wow, Traveling Stranger, man. That song had like a life of its own.
Yeah, you know? It did. I love that song, man. You know, because, you know, being a part of it, you know.
Oh, of course.
And having the background already there. Already. Uh-huh. We didn't, it was just the background. That's all that we did.
Right.
Until Anthony goes, man, let's put some lyric to that thing. Man. It's nice.
Do you remember being on the Merv Griffin show?
Yes.
And did you get to meet Arthur Treacher?
Yes.
Oh, that must have been fun, you know.
Yeah.
Well, you guys were on every show. Did you guys do Mike Douglas also?
Yeah, Mike's a nice man.
He died a few years ago, and he was once on a plane. I was flying back and forth from New York to Florida, and he was once on the plane right across from me. And I put my hand out, I touched his hand, and I said, Mike Douglas, oh my God. I said, you know, what a thrill. I said, I watched you for all those years and you introduced so much talent and whatever. He says, isn't that fabulous that you recognize me? He says, most people just push me out of the way. They have no idea who I am. I said, are you kidding me, man? He says, yeah, I just wrote a book, you know, and whatever. And then I read about a year or two later that he passed away. You know, you can tell me about Ernest a little bit.
A very interesting guy, you know. He loves what he does, you know, and he's been around for a while. Anthony, myself, and Ernest have known each other since we were like little kids.
Right.
And what I mean by by little kids, Mike. It's like, I'm the youngest of all, and it was like 3 and 4 and 5 years old.
So it transcends everything.
That's it.
Right.
You got it. So, and so he's a very unique guy, you know. He's got a great voice. I mean, he's like my brother, you know.
Yeah, but I heard he lives in Staten Island.
Yeah, he's a, you know what I mean.
So what's that all about? I mean, you know, they want to secede from the...
New Yorker, like I tell you. He doesn't, we don't want to live. I got Ernest, man, why don't you move? I'm not going anywhere. I love it right here in New York. I'm a New Yorker.
Yeah.
That's it.
No, but I mean, Staten Island, only Vito Pacone comes from Staten Island. And Ernest, they wanted to secede from New York City and not be one of the boroughs anymore, remember?
I know it. Yeah. I remember that.
Of course, everybody knows that Boca is the sixth borough. Yeah. The Imperials material is like kind of sophisticated, you know?
Well, I'm grateful for us to have our own band with us, you know?
Oh, yeah.
You know, I'm very fortunate. And you know, those guys are great back there, man. And they do a great job for us.
Yep. Did you work a lot for Clay Cole?
Oh, are you kidding me? At the Clay Cole and Murray Decay?
Well, There was a place on Long Island after a while called Clay Cole's World, and Murray Decay had it first. It was in Roosevelt Field, and it was a big airplane hangar that they converted, and Murray Decay had the place, and he lost his liquor license. And then Clay Cole took it over, because we sang there a lot. The Del Satin sang there a lot. And it was funny, I told Clay, you introduced me 43 years ago at that place, and then Barry Newman called me up and says, I want you to sing first tenor with me and J.T. Carter in a couple of shows, and I did. And
Barry?
Yeah.
And Carter, Jay. I saw them down there.
Oh, yeah. And so Clay, I says, here you are. You introduced me 43 years later.
Hi, this is Clay Cole. You're on the Harmony Street Show with my good friend, Mike Miller.
And I did a great interview with him, and he sent me the book and the whole thing. And I reran the interview. Oh, a couple of months ago, and he calls me up and he says, thank you for rerunning the interview, Elik. You're a really good friend. And then during that week, because I run it the whole week, his brother calls me up and he says he was writing Christmas cards, and he passed away just in the middle of writing Christmas cards, Clay Cole.
Yeah, Clay, I got the phone call.
And it was like, you know, what a sweet, sweet guy. I'm glad he got a chance to come back.
We did a rock con together up in New Jersey.
Oh, yeah.
Right up there, and Clay was there selling his book, and he was fine.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm glad he had a chance to write the book, which is a great book, by the way. I mean, it's like fabulous, and he tells stories in there. He tells a story about Dion. They're all at a party, and all of a sudden, Dion, it's at a pool party. Dion goes to the high diving board and does a perfect swan dive into the pool, and everybody says, how does a kid from the Bronx learn how to do a swan dive like that? You know, it was like everybody was in shock. But all his little stories are great little stories. He went out with some big actresses over the years, and he really rubbed elbows with some pretty good people. And, you know, that was then. And, of course, Johnny, you know, I spoke to him the day before he died. I was very close to him and Grace. And, you know, that was a tremendous loss. You know?
And let me tell you something about Johnny, man. Johnny and I, man, I met Johnny when he first put out, you know, 16 Candles,
I'm
and
sure.
Jay and the rest of those guys.
I'm sure.
We were on tour together. We did a Dick Clark tour together.
Right.
And we became very, very, very close, man.
Yeah.
And I tell you something, man. You know, I don't want to get too deep into it.
Okay.
I loved him and I miss him so much.
Yeah,
man.
I can imagine. Yeah.
It makes tears come to my eyes. Man.
Yeah.
But that was my good buddy.
Wow.
And we used to laugh, and talk about the days when we used to ride up and get caught tour buses. That, you know, back in those days they didn't have sleepers, and we used to work together a lot. Also, I know you know this.
Oh yeah. Well, people don't know what a great sense of humor he had. He was very shy, so people thought he was standoffish, but he wasn't. And he had an amazing sense of humor. Amazing sense of humor.
With great, great voice. What a great voice he was, man. I love John.
And then again, you know, spending all these years standing next to Anthony and say what you want. There's only one Anthony.
Yeah. You're absolutely right, man. There's only one Anthony, man.
He's a very special guy and very humble. He says, "Ah, what are you kidding me, man?" He says, "I used to like emulate the Moon Glows and some of those."
He's a Jackie Wilson guy too.
Oh yeah, but the
love Jackie Wilson.
Yeah, but the point is, Anthony was his voice is so distinct, and he still does it. He works. Everybody works really hard on stage and really projects it out there. You guys sing differently than a lot of groups. I mean, it's all crystal clear. The diction is perfect.
I understand what you're saying.
It's
a lot of people tell us that.
It's pristine and it's impeccable. You know, and that's what separates it. Clarence, thank you so much for spending time with me on the Harmony Street Show. I really appreciate it, man. I mean, it's like you guys are my heroes, and I'm just thrilled to know you and have you as a friend and to spend this time with you. Thank you ever so much.
You're welcome, Mike. Thank you, man. You'll always be my friend.
Okay.
You know, because you're a good guy, man. You're just a good guy. And
I'm there.
And I appreciate you even having me on the show. It's marvelous to even be on it, man. And you talk about good things.
Wow.
And you know, harmonies and street corner stuff. And, you know, which is my day, man. You know, back in my...
I love the music. And, you know, I feel like you guys have been with me since I'm a young guy. I mean, you know, you guys have been in my hip pocket for a long time, you know.
Oh, that's great. Man.
Yeah.
Likewise, man, you know.
Yep.
But, no, really, man, I thank you very much for having me on here.
Uh-huh.
That first of all. Yeah. And then second of all, man, and please give me a call back and let me do it again.
Okay, absolutely. Thank you very, very much. Hope you enjoyed my interview with two of my favorite people. Little Anthony and Clarence Collins from the Imperials. This is Mike Miller saying thank you for joining me on Harmony Street. See you next time. Love you. Bye now.
On Harmony Street, open up your heart. Recall how it used to be. Remember all the love we found. On Harmony Street, open up your heart, recall how we